Hi, and welcome to today's episode of The Growth System, the podcast that looks at B2B growth through a systems thinking lens. I'm Colin Shakespeare.
And I'm Chris Bayliss.
And today we're diving into a topic that's central to really every organisation, not just in B2B, and that's budgets. But we're not just talking about like numbers on a spreadsheet. We're really going to explore how traditional budgeting methods might actually be one of those things that we talk about here on The Growth System that's holding companies back, and how maybe taking a systems thinking approach can perhaps offer a better path forward.
Absolutely. So it's that time of year, isn't it? We're in the middle of November. Budget rounds are ramping up if they haven't done so already. Everyone's getting that sort of familiar sinking feeling that the spreadsheet is going to arrive from on high, and some numbers are going to need to be plumbed in, and you know, the quiet argument is going to start. So
sometimes it's not that quiet, to be fair, Chris. Sorry.
And increasingly noisy the closer and closer we get to the end of the financial year. But there is another way. So I think we thought it would be pretty interesting to talk about that. I think it's fair to say that the other way is not all of our ideas whatsoever. We're very much reflecting, a changing of the wind, I guess, in terms of how people think about budgets. But as ever, really trying to unpack that from a systems perspective and try and stitch some of those ideas with a sort of systems thinking mindset. So I saw some stats researching the episode that kind of blew me away, because I've worked in big corporates, Colin's worked in big corporates. We've all been sort of round the budgeting merry-go-round. Yeah, we now do it in RevSpace Group in a much more modest way, but it's a fact of life, right? And therefore, it really shocked me to learn that 72% of CFOs find traditional budgeting yields unrealistic numbers. And I thought, that's kind of mad that we've got this entrenched way of doing things that three quarters of the people that fundamentally own this process don't actually believe in. And another stat which I thought was pretty wild was that it takes 25,000 person days per $1 billion of revenue to put together an annual budget. This is a pretty old stat, but wow. I mean, that is an insane amount of, let's say, money that is being spent putting together this document that three quarters of CFOs think is basically a fantasy. So, you know, the time for thinking about things differently is well overdue, I think. I guess sort of finally, before we maybe get into the meat of it, I saw this sort of Jack Welch. He was the chairman of GE, and his sort of view was that the most ineffective practice in management is the budgeting process. You know, he said that it sucks time, it sucks energy, fun, and big dreams out of an organization. In fact, when companies win, in most cases, it is despite their budgets, not because of them. So against that backdrop, I think it's fair to say that even the people at the top think that the bar is on the floor in terms of how budgets can get better. But before we get into that, why don't we talk about some of the ways that, you know, traditional budgeting creates problems, and maybe let's talk about how budgeting actually gets set in the real world, because I think this is the heart of the problem, right?
Yeah, I mean, those statistics really, really hammer home how much time and effort is invested in traditional budgeting processes that even the people doing it agree is not going to yield the desired results. And I think it just really underscores how we need to reevaluate budgeting. I mean, it strikes me that budgeting shouldn't just be this sort of financial exercise. It's fundamentally a reflection of the organization's health and the organization's priorities. And I think if we approach it the way that we do, and I think you'll probably unpack how we do that at the moment, or how it's traditionally done at least, we miss out on chances of really achieving that alignment. So everyone listening has to drink now, because I've said alignment for the first time. We miss out on that opportunity for alignment between our resources and our strategic vision.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that sort of reality check, I guess, that sort of alignment view is just clearly not present, because certainly, you know, when I worked in bigger enterprises, and even frankly, some much smaller businesses, budgeting is a game. You know, budgeting is something that is gamed. And depending on which sort of area you're in, whether you're in a revenue generating department and you're setting fundamentally targets, you know, what we were talking about last week. And as we talked about last week, you know, what you're going to be doing there is lowballing. You're going to be minimizing the bar at which you kind of success is perceived to be achieved. Because frankly, you've got skin in the game. You know, personal remuneration is linked to budgeting. If you can get away with putting the lowest number possible in the budget, that's in your interest. That's in your department's interest. That's in the interest of not getting a bigger target next year. It's in the interest of looking like a hero because you smash target if that's what you choose to do. So there is a sort of a merry dance taking place, just the same as when you're asking for money. You know, the focus in any department I've ever been in has been, A, let's make sure we retain what we got last year. You know, it's an abject failure if we didn't get the amount of money we got last year as the bare minimum. You know, ideally, we want to grow that amount of money because, to be frank, it ensures that we've got a surplus of kind of resources corralled inside the department, you know, every individual, because we all know how budgets really get set, right? You know, you've got this sort of idea of the number. We've got last year as the benchmark. You've got these sort of budget holders that live inside the department, you know, individual functions within a department, call it a marketing department. Yeah, you've got your whatever it might be, a B2B, a B2C, you know, email, your events team, whatever they are. You know, they've all got their own little fiefdoms and they all want their own stuff and they've all got their own ideas of what they want to spend some money on. And there's nothing sort of inherently, intrinsically wrong with that, but it leads to this culture of like, how much can we get? Let's put all the money inside. Let's kind of create a situation where, particularly where we might have targets around like staying on budget, you know, being on track. Let's make sure they're as easily achieved as possible. Let's sure we've got a nice little nest egg saved up inside our departmental budgets. And of course, you know, you've got these two things taking place. The amount of money coming in is being gamed. The amount of money going out is being gamed. It's all very insular. It's siloed. And ultimately, the sort of mantle on which the company stands actually turns into this sort of internal negotiation with management, a sort of gamesmanship of sorts, where rather than developing something realistic that actually reflects where the company is going and could go, it ends up being pretty, I don't know, arbitrary, fictitious. and this sounds dreadful.
And above all, it's competitive rather than being holistic. Yeah. Not that competitive and holistic are opposites, but I think you know what I'm saying here, where instead of everyone having a view of what does the organization need as a whole, how do we need to allocate our resources in alignment with our strategic goals? No, at this point, everyone has a hill to die on around why they need at least the same amount as they had the year before. And then, we have the big race to make sure that you've spent your budget before the deadline, essentially.
Absolutely. Yeah, well, that, you know, that little nest egg that you've corralled. Okay, well, actually, we've got to now ditch that. You know, it's coming up to the end of the financial year. You know, the great budget dump takes place, which, you know, when you're sitting out here in supplier land, isn't that a lovely time of year when someone phones you up and says, I've really got, you know, £1 million I need to spend before next Tuesday. Could you possibly help me out with that? Yes, of course. But for the business, you know, that's horrendous. You know, that's profit margin flowing out the door to suppliers that's not really required, just in the interest of making sure that you get the same again that you didn't really need next year. Think how many things you've had to sell to get that nest egg disposed of. It's kind of crazy.
Yeah, I mean, it causes a sort of drive towards even more entrenched silos, I think, or certainly sort of siloed thinking. And you sort of suspend this knowledge that we all let's say deep down, have that every budget decision is going to have a knock-on effect right across the organization. You allocate resources here, it's going to have unexpected consequences elsewhere, unless we actually sort of take this holistic view. And I mean, I've been in a sales team that's, and again, we won't name any names here, but a sales team that's lost headcount, which has been reallocated to marketing, ostensibly to create more leads to feed fewer salespeople, only for that marketing budget to be spent on an external agency to do what the headcount we lost were doing. And there's a sort of, it was quite a quantitative view on how to sort of analyze the efficacy of that, rather than maybe taking into account some of the, and hopefully we'll get into this later, some of the less measurable, but certainly tangible effects of that, even just around the morale of the team and sort of, I guess, faith in the decision makers, but also in the quality of work that was being produced. And ultimately, I guess the spoiler is it didn't solve the problem. And again, I think this is a result of this, everyone retreating into their silos as we come around to budget time.
Yeah, 100%. And yet this kind of traditional view of budgeting, this kind of annual budgeting process, seems to persist, even though everyone kind of observes these behaviors, which is kind of mad. But let's maybe talk about some of the sort of, I guess, challenges of traditional budgeting, some of the limitations of traditional budgeting. And I think the main one, really, there are lots of competition to be the main one, I think, here, but it is just that, the fact it's an annual budgeting process, this kind of infrequency and rigidity that we get from the fact that we start the budgeting maybe in November, you know, we ramp it up, it gets locked in maybe somewhere around January, February, maybe right down to the 11th hour, depending on how kind of efficient your organization is. But it's this sort of outdated and static reflection of the world as it was at the point that someone, you know, clicked save final on the giant spreadsheet. And it kind of leads to this fragility, I guess, because what was decided then becomes sacrosanct. It is untouchable. And yet the world changes so quickly, more quickly, it feels, than ever before. And yet, you know, any sort of market response is hindered by the fact that budgets have been allocated. You know, we haven't got budget for that. You know, and I think that's kind of crazy that we create this process that, as you say, is rooted in silos and rooted in a lack of flexibility because it's the right way of doing things. I think it's kind of mad. I think also the starting point for sort of traditional budgeting is a big issue because invariably, as we said kind of in the intro, it's last year is the starting point, right? You know, no one's starting with a clean, you know, a blank spreadsheet. We're going to start with, you know, save as 2024, you know, backspace 2025. Okay, we've got our working document. And then it's about incrementality almost. It's like, okay, well, what else would we like? All these things are in here because they've always been in here. So you've got this, again, this sort of not just a view of the world as it was when the budget was saved, but maybe from many years past in terms of what we spend our money on. So, and of course, I think you've got to an ability within that to bake a load of inaccuracies, errors, whatever into that, that ultimately don't kind of account for whatever the current sort of view of the world and performance standards are. So they've got this sort of inflexibility that comes from how they're created, how frequently they're created. And they're really like static documents, and yet static documents that take an unbelievable amount of time to actually get over the line.
Like 4 months since some organizations have worked in, easily 4 months, or like that's the target.
Oh, good looks like, yeah.
Yeah, that's what good looks like, is doing this in 4 months, one third of your year, in creating this stagnant sort of static document from lagging indicators, or perhaps not even really, maybe that's being too kind. There is a bit of a copy and paste sort of syndrome going on here as well. I think we work typically mostly in the tech industry as well, where the just it's almost a cliche to say the sheer pace of that is very, let's say, dynamic environment. That's almost euphemistic. It really makes rigid budgets outdated very quickly. And I think we all need to, I think there's a generalized sort of awareness of this, but then an acceptance that this is just the kind of the way that it is. And it's hard to be thinking about adaptive budgeting models that can actually evolve with the changing circumstances. And I think there is a need to have a grown-up conversation about this.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, I read a stat, which I don't want to believe, that suggests that 20% of management time over a whole year is related to budgets.
Wow.
The creation and management and reporting of, you know, like that's one day a week spent driving a document that 75% of CEOs don't believe in. Crazy.
I guess you've got to wonder how much sort of dedication to you know, there can't be a whole lot of perfectionism going on in terms of creating budgets that no one believes in, frankly, as well. So I wonder how that's impacting the quality of work. Maybe that's a tangent. Maybe we should think about that another time.
Yeah, absolutely. I think there is a direct relationship between that. And I think some of that comes from this, you know, the top as well, because not that I'm trying to lay all the problems at the foot of the CFO here, but as soon as you've got this kind of centralized decision-making, like budgeting goes up the chain of command, you know, the success or failure of your application comes back down, often with zero justification that, you know, here's what you got. And that can lead to, I think, some pretty dodgy decision-making, because people that don't necessarily understand the operational reality of the business are arbitrarily, almost, it probably feels, maybe in reality, putting the red pen through stuff and not really seeing how it all connects together, just because, oh, that's quite a big number, let's just half that, and then we can give this bit to over here. And it all in the sort of, the, you know, when it comes to the death of actually getting it signed off, like, how do these decisions get made? They get made up on high by people that don't really understand what's behind the budget line on the spreadsheet. And that's, again, kind of crazy, I think, that this whole sort of house of cards then has resource allocation kind of linked to it. It has compensation linked to it, whether that's in terms of like revenue attainment or whether it's around cost control or being on budget. I mean, that we then start paying out on achieving the numbers on this static document from up to 12, 15, however many months ago. And just the more you think about it, the more you think, my God, why do we do this?
Yeah.
Why does no one question it?
That relationship between sales targets, incentive structures, and budgeting is, I think, probably a whole other episode or episodes in itself. Something else that you brought up there that I think is a kind of subset of problems within this wider set of problems is around cost control. That seems to be a big priority. And, you know, I want to have some empathy for CFOs here. It's not like I think CFOs are like terrible people or bad at their job or anything. It's clearly a systems issue. Again, everyone should drink. But there's a tendency to, instead of viewing budgets as a sort of enabler of organizational development, is viewed as a cost control exercise. And, you know, that's perhaps perfectly understandable. But I think if you sat down with a blank sheet of paper and kind of reinvented budgeting, you would be thinking about it in those more sort of positive terms of how we use the budget to kind of drive the organization forward rather than pinching pennies.
Yeah, 100%.
Perhaps being reductive, pinching pennies, but I think cost control tends to be prioritized over sort of organizational development.
Yeah, I think it absolutely does. I mean, the objective is to balance the books. It's to make sure that the budget that we expect to have based on the revenue we expect to have is allocated in a way that is perceived to be fair by all of the people in there based on what they've asked for. It doesn't have any direct connection to like a holistic view of where value comes from, or at least not in my experience. So I think that ultimately it reinforces silos, doesn't it? It is rooted in siloed thinking. Every department submits their budget. It goes up the chain of command. It comes back down. You expect when it reaches the sort of apex that things are considered in a more holistic way, but they're not really. The money is considered in a holistic way. The strategy isn't, that sat underneath those. Because how can it be? You know, it's numbers on a spreadsheet. So this sort of reinforcement of silos, I think, is one of the big issues. And when we kind of start talking about the systems view of the problem, well, that's a really, really big part of it. That it is ultimately a wedge to be driven between teams, because it leads, as you said, absolutely rightly in the intro, it creates a competitive atmosphere within the organization. You know, departments vie for larger and larger shares of budget, and the broader sort of organizational impact that is just not considered. It's not with anyone's interest to consider it. It's not a component of the process to consider it. So it's not considered. And it sort of represents a sort of, I guess, series of sort of reinforcing kind of feedback loops, I guess, within each individual department that sort of self-justify. You know, if we've got more, we'll get more. Great. You know, we're sort of self-justifying. You know, this sort of more equals more approach.
More is more.
Yeah, more is more. So absolutely. So more budget is more of everything. So let's do that. And because we have this kind of lack of interdepartmental kind of balancing loops, we don't kind of get this view that more in one department probably means less in another department. And when we live in a system that, whilst is, it contains many entities, but those entities are all related. So if it's sales and marketing, you know, you use the example of sales getting less and marketing could get more. Well,
of course I use that example.
Yeah. But it's a great one, isn't it? Because it ultimately in the growth system is what we talk about, sales and marketing and the growth team. And if we have less sellers that are less motivated because they've got less budget because they've lost some of their colleagues, and you know, it's all been put into marketing. A, we've reinforced an adversarial relationship. We've created a situation where theoretically more leads are going to have to be managed by less people. So the quality of the way that those leads are going to be managed is likely to have gone down. Possibly it's unsustainable. Possibly it will lead, if our, you know, the marketing colleagues do a great job, we've got leads that can't be responded to. In fact, actually, we spoke to a prospect a little while back. I can't remember who it was, but said something that shocked both of us. We're just like, oh yeah, we only get back to about 50% of our inbound inquiries.
Oh, yeah, do you? Wow. That's some serious leakage. You think about how difficult it is for most organizations to produce enough leads to not get back to 50% of them and survive. Like, there's a lot of effort wasted, isn't it?
Unbelievably so. A lot of budget wasted generating all those leads which have gone nowhere. And you know, that probably had its roots in a process like the one we've been describing at some point. Oh yeah, we're great at doing this. We're getting more leads. So can we have more budget? Of course you can. You know, that makes perfect sense. Can anyone deal with them in sales? Well, that's not a factor on the spreadsheet. You know, it's just, it's kind of crazy, but it's happening. And it's about to start happening. So, you know, hence the timing of this podcast.
Well, we're well into the season for it now, aren't we?
'Tis the season, yeah. And these kind of interdepartmental feedback loops, this kind of system view of the interrelated nature of what budget is spent on, and indeed the interrelated nature of what budget is taken away from, is not considered and should be considered. And ultimately, the traditional budgeting process does not view the organization as a interconnected set of entities. It does not view it as a system of interconnected parts. It views it as a collection of buckets in which money is tipped into and tipped out of during the budgeting process. And that's so obviously wrong. Because it drives this misalignment. And I think it's no more so than probably around goals. There is always a sort of give-get scenario, right? You know, if we're going to ask for X budget, then we're going to deliver Y outputs. So again, this is a root of misalignment, of organizational misalignment, because the books have to be balanced, do they not? If we want to have our little nest egg and we want to do our little budget grab, then we're probably going to say, we'll do a bit more of, we'll do 10% more of output, whatever output is, whether that is sales or product launches or features or whatever it is.
Or as we said in the first episode, MQLs.
MQLs, indeed.
Back in the very first episode, we talked about this, actually.
Yeah, 100%. So we're massaging the figures everywhere. And these goals are not aligned, are they? Because no one's looking at them. So when we're thinking about kind of how we start fixing stuff, that system view is obviously the root of it. I don't know, what more can we say on systems? I mean, there's quite a lot of our good old favorite archetypes we could probably apply to this. But I think that the way that I would kind of think about this is the traditional budgeting approach leads to a sort of measurement myopia. It's a phrase, I think, in something that you shared with me, Colin. I think it's a really great way of looking at it.
That was me trying to be wordy and live up to my name.
Because I sort of love this sort of thought that we just, by just focusing in on the numbers, by this budget process just being about the metrics, then it really leads us to focus only on what is quantifiable. It's sort of if this, then that. If I get this, then I will produce that. And this sort of lack of thought given to the sort of intangible factors like morale, like organizational development, like learning, like customer relationships. None of that features in a budgeting process, really. You might get someone linking their spend in customer success to NPS or something, great. But if we are suddenly going to ask people, this is one that I've seen quite often in the budgeting process, you'll get this like clean sheet of paper, like go and just ask us for whatever you want. And everyone just knows it's a merry dance because you're only going to get whatever last year, plus or minus 10%. And people put a lot of heart and soul into going and making up these plans and these strategies. And they get really invested in them. They put them in the spreadsheet and lo and behold, they don't get the money. And employee morale is the first thing to suffer there. Like it feels like a rational spreadsheet exercise, but a lot of human effort and endeavor and kind of emotional energy has gone into producing those things. And I think that is one of the sort of unspoken casualties of the budgeting process is just this sense that we're all in this together and that we're up and up for the challenge because everyone knows, it's really just about last year plus 10%. So I think that the sort of narrowed focus onto the numbers, the sort of measurement myopia, means that we just don't consider anything without immediate financial returns or quantifiable outcomes.
Or anything that's too hard to measure, be a bit reductive, it's like anything that's too hard to measure. Like how do you measure employee morale in a way that then doesn't become, the Goodhart's law doesn't come into play and then it ceases to become a good measure? Like what are tangible, measurable ways to measure what are fundamentally sort of fairly intangible or qualitative, like what is the if you look at organizational health through the lens of learning and development, like how much are we going to progress in that in the next year, or how much have we progressed in that in the last year? Well, how do you measure that without then, again, Goodhart's law coming into play, and your people are sort of teaching to the test in order to show, look, we have this number of certifications this year, and therefore we are a more learned organization, or you raised NPS scores and sort of customer loyalty. That doesn't necessarily tell you exactly where the health of customer loyalty is at. But of course, these are all super critical elements of long-term success, and indeed probably short-term success as well. I think part of the reason that this problem persists, this kind of root cause of a lot of the misalignment that we talk about, is that it kind of get the idea of fixing this problem gets pushed into the too hard pile, probably because you're spending 4 or 5 months doing the budgets, and so naturally it does become too. And to be fair, a lot of what you're planning for in the budget is probably fighting fires and fixing problems that exist now, which is another huge drain, rather than on sort of proactive sort of programs to improve organizational health.
Yeah, I think that you make such a good point there, that what doesn't get taken into account, I think, when reviewing the success of a budget, is this sort of delays in feedback. This sort of the impact of underinvesting in something intangible. The impact generally manifests itself over a much longer period. It's much harder to kind of link cause and effect, particularly within the confines of a sort of a budgeting process and a budget review process. And it's so often that emergent system behavior, these kind of intangible behaviors, whether it's like innovation capacity or employee engagement or brand reputation, these are typically really strong leading indicators of future system success that aren't considered within the budgeting process because they don't measure well in the short term. And therefore, they're quite hard to put budget justification against. And I think that's something that is the death of businesses, that you can continue doing that year on year without really, you don't know what you've got till it's gone. I think it's probably the problem that you see there. And there's a sort of interconnectedness of all of this, the sort of siloed view, the measurement myopia. You talked about like filer fighting, kind of creating, misallocations potentially of budget, and you've got this sort of constantly shifting sand of intangible impacts that you just can't see on the spreadsheet. So we talked about the problems as ever. Let's talk about what to do instead, shall we? I mean, do you want to kick us off on some what to do instead thoughts?
Look, in terms of what to do instead, as you know, I have recently started to dip my toe into the how budgets are created world, and it's kind of a minefield. I know that in the research we looked into things like sort of smart budgeting, like this emphasis on sort of agility and speed and continuous planning. I can't say that I am an expert in this area, but I think there's a lot out there in the research, I think, about sort of implementing flexible, maybe monthly budgeting and responding to sort of rolling forecasts and being more agile in how we make adjustments. I guess enabling organizations to kind of pivot and swiftly adjust to market shifts and kind of maintain that competitive edge.
Yeah.
And I think as a general point, there's a need to move towards sort of more, let's say, decentralized or more sort of autonomous units collaborating with other stakeholders and fostering this sort of iterative continuous improvement model. And obviously, that's going to sort of foster greater, or you one would think would foster greater communication and understanding across departments. Now, we work in a relatively small organization and have seen you know, how that can work in at that scale. I don't have any positive examples from my career of that really working in practice in some of the larger organizations, and you referred to working in corporates when it's quite the opposite.
Yeah, I saw quite a nice analogy. I thought of the sort of agile planning approach to budgeting that you're kind of talking about there, which is a sort of analogy of a ship trying to sail to a destination. That traditional budgeting would mean that if it plotted a course on a chart, it would sail on that course and it knows what its destination is, and it will not deviate from that course or anything, whether there is a hurricane or a ship in the way or whatever is on there. That's the path that's the seas that are being plowed through. Whereas this sort of agile approach is more around accepting that there will be conditions, on that journey, which will lead to deviations from the course. We still know that we're trying to get from, here to the other side of the Atlantic. And an agile approach doesn't mean that you could leave for Boston and end up in Belize, as this sort of thing I was reading suggested. But it still means that you've just got the flexibility baked into the process to navigate around storms. So I thought that was quite a nice way of thinking about it, the sort of agile planning, is that whilst it prioritizes flexibility, there is still a destination in mind in terms of where we're trying to get to. So there are a few things that I was looking at in here, and all of them really seem to come back to one kind of central idea, which was this sort of concept of rolling forecasts. As you said, the sort of agile approach is all around better collaboration, better transparency, more data-driven insights, but ultimately it was about shorter term, I think, was the main outtake that I took out of that, by ultimately looking at much shorter periods, be they quarters probably, to align budgets with kind of the current reality that the business is facing, be that positive or negative. If you have a run of deals close in a particular area and you're ahead of target, well, actually, you might be able to spend a bit more to get some more of those rather than being locked into the budget that you set in the past. Equally, if things aren't quite as good, then you're going to want to make some decisions around, do we actually need to spend more in that scenario? Do we need to spend less? What is the reality that we're facing right now? And I think that's something that just makes so much more sense, particularly if you have got a destination in mind in terms of some broad targets to hit. And it just sort of prioritizes utilizing data and analytics, using data-driven insights to kind of make decisions. And isn't that just such an obvious thing to do, which most budgeting processes don't allow for? I also thought that something in this kind of like agile view of the world, which I thought was just so sensible, is actually a sort of value-driven approach to budgeting, which might sound like an obvious thing, but rather than saying, how much money do you want, department, actually really linking back to what is the corporate strategy, where is value going to be created to drive us towards that strategy? What are the strategic priorities? How are those going to get delivered? And ultimately, doing resource allocation based on the high impact areas, the sort of levers that can be pulled to make sure that we're maximizing return on investment across the piece, across the entire budget. So whilst there's sort of a technical almost, and this is not resolutely not an accountancy podcast, so we're not seeking to give, financial business advice here. I think that this just agile, shorter term planning window, data-driven, sort of strategy-driven approach to budgeting just inherently and sort of instinctively just makes so much more sort of sense.
Yeah. I think there's also, there's a kind of trade-off between I guess there's a lot of talk nowadays about sort of optimizing for efficiency, and there's a kind of trade-off between that and actually maintaining this adaptability that you're talking about. I think what we're starting to realize now that's a difficult balance. Like, you can go too far the other way. I mean, over optimizing for efficiency can really sort of reduce your resilience. Like, just look at what happened to global supply chains during COVID, for example. So I think when we're thinking about the solution here, it means that in budgeting, we have to be leaving room for experimentation and not necessarily committing all of our resources, as you kind of mentioned earlier, where you're saying, oh, we don't have the budget for that. Good idea comes along, oh, but we don't have the budget for that. Don't commit all resources to rigid plans and actually leave that sort of scope for the organization to pivot when necessary without that being a sort of shared trauma for everyone in the organization.
Yeah, I've seen... actually, in the real world, one particularly good example of people doing that, which is this sort of, I can't remember what it's called, but essentially it's sort of the innovation approach to budget allocation, which is the sort of 70-20-10 model. I think Google are probably credited with doing this. I seem to remember it's an older piece of thinking, but it's not really important. But fundamentally, it was... yeah, put 70% in BAU, put 20% in stuff that is probably going to be fine. You know, it's not quite a sure thing, but it's certainly a good solid bet. And leave 10% just for making wild bets, you know, for pure innovation, for things that you're effectively willing to lose 100% of. And I think that's an interesting way of viewing the world, even if it's at a departmental siloed level, actually, even if you just made people do that. You're going to drive a lot more innovation into the process, but you're also going to drive more greater flexibility to capture opportunities as they arise, rather than being fully allocated, as you say.
Yeah, so that's an interesting point as well, that 10% that's left for innovations and sort of unexpected things and to be able to kind of follow through on good ideas, I guess.
Yeah.
Which is interesting. There's a tension here, isn't there, between... enabling greater autonomy and decision making in things like and budgeting and innovation between departments and sort of business units, I guess, however you want to divide them up, and yet still acting in a more sort of holistic fashion or thinking in a more holistic fashion about it all. I guess to choose an analogy outside of the business world, this is why. As Chris knows, I'm sort of military nerd. this is why NATO forces are trained to fight the way that they do, where sort of individual commanders at the battalion level are enabled to make decisions, which in, say, to choose a sort of cogent example, in the Russian army, which is trained to fight in much larger formations, where that's simply not possible. I mean, in some cases in the last couple of years, we've seen... the president making tactical battlefield decisions on behalf of a unit in occupied Ukraine, whereas their fighting forces were individual command. That would never happen, you know. And so, nevertheless, there's no doubt that the NATO or NATO trained forces are obviously operating in a, essentially they're all working towards the same goal, and they do have dynamic resource allocation, etc. But it's just that there's this enablement and empowerment, I guess, of individuals to, you know, they're not just working to a rigid plan; they're moving towards the same goal.
There is an old military adage, isn't there, that no plan survives first contact with the enemy, and I think that you can, you can see that NATO example, but I think you can see that in budgeting. Something that you said 12 months ago is not going to be fit for purpose in 8 months' time when some, speed bump in the road occurs that you didn't foresee. And I think this sort of rolling forecast approach, where you've got not just a 12, 18-month view, you might even have a 36-month view. Where's the business going to be in 36 months? What does that look like? Obviously, the detail is not going to be high in those longer views, but you're constantly filling it in 3 months at a time. You're constantly updating it. So you've got this kind of flexible, adaptable approach that allows you to kind of, focus on key value drivers, focus on kind of critical variables like revenue growth and cost structures and kind of the whatever performance indicators you're using within the organization, so you can make really fast adjustments to what's happening out there in the market. But also you can kind of keep the budget more closely aligned with company strategy, because goals and priorities shift over time, opportunities emerge, and it gives us an adaptable framework to start capturing some of that stuff.
Sorry to interrupt. I was thinking, kind of part of the point I was making here is, imagine if you are in a sort of traditional rigid budgeting system, let's euphemistically call it a system, and all your resources have been allocated at the start of the year, and then, as often happens, new opportunity, let's not even be negative about it, a new fantastic opportunity arises, which requires you to redirect some resources and maybe make some innovations. However, you're not able to respond to that quickly enough or in an agile enough fashion, because you have to send that request up the chain as far as the CFO. That's the kind of business equivalent of what I was talking about. And the CFO has to sort of clear time to then understand the opportunity in itself and sort of trickle that back down through the relevant channels, by which time the opportunity, especially in the tech industry and the speed that things move, is probably gone.
Yeah, 100%. So the sort of the rolling approach, and that's something else that I was reading about, which actually I must say is not something that I'd previously been familiar with, but I sort of liked the strategic purity of the idea of something called zero-based budgeting. I don't know whether you read about that.
Yeah, I've been calling it ZBBs, but
yeah. Good. The basic concept of this, because I will, let's not go into the, you know, the nuts and bolts detail of it, but fundamentally, is you always start with a clean sheet in whatever period. Even if you're doing a rolling budget basis, you always going back to justifying every activity. And I think that whilst that could be slow and potentially could be inefficient, so we're not necessarily advocating it, what it does do is ensure that you've never got any dead wood in there that you're just doing because you've always done it. If you can't justify it versus the current strategy that's prevailing within the business, then you shouldn't be doing it. So I think this sort of zero-based approach is pretty interesting, I think, in terms of being able to ensure that you've always promoting cost savings, you know, you're always identifying and eliminating unnecessary expense, you're always encouraging goal alignment, you're always kind of focusing on accountability. You know, departments have got to justify their expenditure. I guess the reality of that is that it's probably time consuming, it's probably resource intensive, and it probably leads to a degree of short-termism.
Well, hang on though, Chris, hang on. If 25,000 person days are spent per $1 billion, presumably it was, of revenue, isn't there a significant scope to kind of reallocate those person days across the year to be doing this? Maybe I take your point about sort of short-termism, maybe. But in terms of the resource allocation, I'm not sure I buy it, because we've got these stats that you told us at the beginning about the 25,000 person days.
Yeah, and I think there's a sort of horses for courses thing going on here. I think it's very tempting for big business to think this would never work for us, but ultimately they're where most of the dead wood is. You know, I think that if you are in a budget that's got constraints, that is looking at strategic realignment, you know, or indeed that's kind of experiencing growth or restructure or whatever, actually that zero-based approach is probably a very healthy way to think about how all this money is flowing out the door. So yes, I do get that, and I guess it's all down to time horizons, as with so much of this stuff. You're probably not going to do a zero-based budget every quarter, but you might do one every year and then evaluate it every quarter using a rolling approach. I think that the two things are interrelated in the sense that they ultimately promote strategic alignment. They promote, you know, constant reevaluation of what is going out the door and what value it is creating and how aligned that is with the strategic objectives of the organization. And I think that, you know, when we think about that in our specific world of kind of B2B tech, that it gives you the ability to kind of be much more connected to kind of market trends, to kind of market dynamics, You know, as we see behaviors changing, as we see competitive landscapes changing, as we see competitors releasing features that we need to potentially react to, you know, whatever it might be, industry trends, you know, it gives us a framework for enabling shifts within what we're doing without it having to go all the way up to the CFO. And I think that's quite a key thing. I think also something that we haven't talked about, but I thought was quite an interesting thing that I was reading, was about sort of value alignment. You know, in the B2B tech world, innovation and kind of R&D is such a significant part of the of what makes companies successful, and ensuring that we're kind of allocating sufficient funds into R&D is such a key point in terms of how we're thinking about budgeting, and coming back to the point we were making earlier about sort of intangibles, stuff that doesn't have an immediate return. You know, I think when we have a sort of value of innovation within the business, making sure that we're just vet checking our budget allocation, that it's making sure we're delivering against our values, I think is quite an interesting way of looking at the world. So we are up against time, as we always are. Shall we think about maybe just sharing a few best practices from a systems thinking perspective to sort of round out the episode in terms of what an alternative approach to budgeting could be?
Yeah, I think I think unexpectedly, this episode's perhaps we could run and run. We could probably do a second budgets episode at some point and still have stuff left to talk about. It's an even richer topic than I expected.
For something that amounts to talking about a spreadsheet, it's definitely an opportunity, kind of rich environment, isn't it, in terms of talking about things from a systems perspective. And I guess to maybe kick us off with a first point, and maybe this could be our summing up as well in the way that we normally do. But I think the number one thing when we're thinking about budgeting effectively in a non-traditional way, in an agile way, is focusing on interconnections across departments. You know, we know that the company is an ecosystem of departments, it's an ecosystem of entities, and budgeting should reflect this kind of interconnectedness. So encouraging collaboration and transparency across the departments during the budget planning process, you know, for instance, aligning marketing and sales projections and product development timelines rather than working in nice, you know, departmental silos, like, crazy idea, but maybe we should think about when we're spending budget based on when the products are coming out and, you know, what marketing we're doing based on what sales are doing, or what sales we're doing based on what marketing are doing. So kind of having this shared understanding of resource needs, resource allocation.
I guess transparency between the departments as well, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Do you want to go for one, or shall I keep bludgeoning on?
I was going to say something about it. It's a dynamic sort of adaptive budgeting model is what is pretty obvious that there's a need for. There's, you know, as you particularly illustrated, like, it's just not a fit for the dynamic and complex business environments that we actually work in to be spending 4 or 5 months creating this static document that no one believes in. And adaptive models obviously are kind of one solution to that problem. And I think rolling forecasts is something that I think we could even look into that in more detail later. Or certainly flexible budgeting techniques is something that not just finance, but I guess the line of business heads, et cetera, need to kind of look at and certainly be thinking about at the moment and moving forward and adapting planning to sort of real-time data and emerging trends, and I guess leaving room, that this is something that's often forgotten that you brought up, leaving some fat in the budget, if you like, for innovation, new opportunities and things that come up during the course of the period, let's say if it's a year or a quarter or a month, and allowing that rapid adjustment to market changes and allowing resources, aligning your resources with, you know, evolving opportunities and threats as they come along, rather than saying, oh, we'll factor this into next year's budget.
Yeah, I think in a similar vein, I would think that thinking about budgeting through the lens of like system leverage points, to sound very systems thinking about this, but we've talked about leverage points before, we've talked about levers, and ultimately identifying the levers in the system, the leverage points that can drive positive outcomes, you know, whether that is R&D spending in a tech company when we know that we've got a big market shift, you know, that would maybe be an obvious one. That if we are maybe looking for a Series B, then actually customer acquisition, maybe at all costs, is actually a lever that we're pulling to then drive growth, not one we would necessarily advocate, but certainly a common one. So I think looking at these value levers and using those as a methodology through which to view the budget. So ensuring that we've identified the levers and that we are investing in pulling them for value creation purposes, so that, you know, when we're building the budgets, focusing on these kind of high impact areas that contribute to overall system performance. Do you want to go another one?
Yeah, go on then. Go on. I think something that's lacking in a lot of organizations, certainly in my experience, is sort of effective and transparent and, I'll just say it, honest sort of feedback mechanisms, let's say, that promote that ideal of sort of full transparency and sort of reliable information being part of the feedback loop. So obviously it's absolutely essential for the system itself, just as an ecosystem responds to changes. Companies need to have mechanisms to adjust their budgets based on new insights, and that means that effective feedback mechanisms have to be in place. And that's not just feedback feeding up the chain, but I think something that's sorely lacking is real transparency across departments and across functions. So there needs to be a regular review process, and I guess part of that process has to be analyzing performance metrics that make sense and don't just focus purely on the easy to do quantitative metrics. We produce this many leads and so on, and that's actually quite hard to do. And there's a need for to implement a system to govern that and to inform, like, across the whole organization. I mean, I've even been in organizations where there are different sort of organizational sort of designs in different business units, for example, which makes that very challenging.
Yeah. Yeah, I think sort of wrapping around those are this sort of data kind of visualization, business intelligence kind of view, right? So if we're making these decisions, we've got this kind of continuous improvement cycle, these feedback mechanisms, that we really need the data to make informed decisions. And it's something that we talked about, I think, actually in the metrics episode, maybe even last week as well. It's like this concept of scorecards and having data at your fingertips. You know, we don't talk, and it's something that we should change, I think, about what you might broadly call non-human systems, technology, integration, automation, composability, all that stuff, going slightly off topic here. But that kind of technology architecture, that sort of technology ecosystem that's going to put data at our fingertips, that's going to enable data visualization, that's going to enable scenario planning, you know, I think that's something that really needs to be part of an agile budgeting system and a sort of modern budgeting system.
Yeah, I think, just to interject, I think that that we've been talking about behaviors that kind of drive and reinforce silos, and it's some we don't talk enough about how important it is for the technology stack and the non-human systems to be aligned, and that has essentially the opposite effect. And it's actually an area that we work in quite extensively at the moment as well, so we should talk about that more, facilitating the flow of that data and the right information to the right people in real time, which is of course possible and surprisingly kind of, let's say, underdone even in the B2B tech world.
Yeah, absolutely. I think a final one probably for me in terms of what good looks like from a systems perspective, And actually, I'm reflecting back on the episode where we talked about some systems failures, things like the Cisco kind of flip debacle. If you don't align budget with kind of the company's vision and culture and values, you know, if it doesn't pass that test of alignment, then the budget probably isn't right, no matter how much justification you can put around it in the justification spreadsheet. So I think that if budgets don't reflect the company's vision, they don't reflect its values, then they are going to create misalignment. It is going to create misalignment. So, you know, if we are a business that is saying we are going to change the world through innovation and we're not spending anything on R&D, well, that's a problem. You know, if we are a business that is going to be the number one enterprise networking business and we're going to spend $500 million on a consumer product, that's probably an issue. So let's think about that sort of cultural and vision lens when we're reviewing the budget.
Yeah.
So I suspect that is probably slightly more things than we had time for.
Yes. We've probably gone a bit over. I actually had one more final thought just before we wrap
up. Let's have a final one to see us off.
So part of the problem, part of the inertia in fixing these problems, which I think the data that points that you told us about at the start made it obvious that kind of everyone knows that this is a problem. And part of the problem is that if you try and make changes, if you're the CFO and you say, well, we're going to do budgeting differently now, it's quite hard to know whether or not that's going to work or how that's going to play out. The only way to do it is to just kind of do it. And that's a tremendous risk. And I think CFOs are typically quite risk averse, and they essentially have to be. And I think this is something that we're going to have to go into. Sorry, I will shut up in a minute. This is something that we're going to have to go into, I think, probably on a separate episode, because we are now at a point, I think, with emerging technologies around data analytics and particularly AI, where it really enables us as systems thinkers to approach budgeting through a sort of predictive modeling. So we can essentially, you know, see what would happen, or at least have a better go at predicting what would happen if we make certain changes, rather than having to take the risk of implementing changes and see what happens. And, you know, maybe, you know, go to prison or certainly get fired. But I think, yeah, certainly an episode on predictive modeling, we'd have to dive into this budgeting issue as well, tools that can allow us to sort of simulate various budgeting scenarios or indeed other scenarios and sort of improve decision making and really be able to compute all these complex interdependencies that we're talking about in a way that's maybe a whiteboard's not ideal for. And we know some people who would probably argue differently, who just really love whiteboards, but
so do.
But I think I will shut up now, because I could talk too much about modeling. It's too interesting.
It's not our problem with an unstructured episode, isn't it? We get all a bit unstructured. But I think that's been really interesting. I think it's been interesting to explore a different way of viewing the world around budgets. I certainly think that some of the organizations I've worked in the past would have really benefited from some of these more agile approaches. I think that they would have made far better decisions in the course of the year. And I hope everyone listening can maybe take a few crumbs into their own budgeting process and maybe think a little bit differently about how things ought to be done.
Yeah, and on that note, we'd really appreciate a moment of your time to tell us what you think, either just about the Growth System podcast in general, or indeed what your thoughts are on this episode, or maybe just your sort of stories about traumatic budgeting experiences. And certainly we'll delve back into that, depending on what comes back. That's definitely all we have time for today. We've kind of run a bit on from where we... The length of a normal podcast. All that's left to say, the Growth System is brought to you by RevSpace. We're an applied growth consultancy that connects B2B organisations with the future of growth, offering consultancy, education and applied delivery services. Don't forget to follow and rate the podcast. It really helps us bring the content to a wider audience. And as I said, we'd really appreciate a moment of your time to tell us what you think. That's all we've got for this week, though. See you again next time.